Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928#1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Welcome, everybody. It's early evening in Arizona, and I hope you all are having a great day. This is Celeste Duckworth, and I am your host for A Taste of Link Inc. Live Radio, where we introduce authors from all over the world that you may not have heard about. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing author Laurel Ann Hill. She's been here with us before. She has another book, and this is going to be a great book to interview her about. But let me give you a little bit of synopsis first. The book is Plague of Flies and the Revolt of the Spirits, 1846. In 1846, Alta California, Catalina Delgado dreams about her future, roping cattle, marrying Angelo Ortega, and raising children. But now, invaders from the United States, the Bear Flaggers, have declared war against Mexico, her country. Bear Flaggers have imprisoned one close family friend and murdered others. What fate might befall her parents, Abuelito, and a younger brothers, and what about her best friend? How can Catalina, only 16, help protect all those she loves? You're going to find out in this book because I'm not going to give you too much of the story. It's a great story. So I want to introduce to you Laurel Ann Hill. She's an author and former underground storage tank operator who grew up in San Francisco with dreams of adventure than a good sense of money. Her close brushes with death, love of family, respect for honor, and belief in a higher power continue to influence her writing and her life. Laurel has authored over 30 published short stories and 2 award-winning young adult novels. Most recently, The Engine Woman's Light, The Gripping Spirits Meet Steam Pump, Coming of Age, Heroic Journey of a Young Latina in an Alternate 19th Century California, The Engine Woman's Light has won a total of 13 honors and awards, including a Kirkus Star. Sandhill Review Press is on schedule to publish, which she's already published, because this was published in October of 2021, young adult novel, Plague of Flies, Revolt of the Spirits. And we're going to introduce to you Laurel Ann Hill. How are you, Laura? How you doing?
I'm doing great. You can hear me all right?
Yeah, it's great to talk to you again after, after interviewing you last time. I'm glad to have you on the radio again.
Yes. I saw your picture and I said, I know that woman. And I was so delighted that I was going to get to speak with you again.
Oh, great. I've been reading a little bit of this book. And you know what? What's been exciting is the historic part. And I'll tell you, because we're going to talk about this part of the history in here. Now, I grew up in California, so you know how California is with teaching history in the books. But this is a little-known history in your book that I really didn't know about.
A lot of people don't.
I bet. I was like, wow, this is, I mean, we hear, you know what, we hear about everything else around it, but not just going through the whole thing. So let's get into talking about your book. So it's The Plague of Flies, and tell me a little bit of how you decided to write this book, because it has a little bit of your own history as well.
That's right. And I started to do research to write the book because I knew very, very little about the Mexican side of my family. My father was half Mexican. And so I had started to do research into family history, and really all I had at that point to deal with were family rumors. So I imagined, after I heard through the family rumors that my family had been in California in the mid-1800s sometime that they had lost their land and to the Yankees, to the, you know, people from the United States. And so I erroneously assumed, oh, they were probably here during the time when California and the adjacent states or parts of the adjacent states belonged to Mexico. And so I thought, well, I'm going to honor my family and I am going to go and write about this, only I'll make up the characters. And I started doing research. Well, what I eventually found out was that my family didn't come up to California until after it had already become a state in the United States.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So by that time, my characters were entrenched in my head, and I had to write their story. You don't say, no, right. I'm not going to write your story now. You'll never sleep again. So, and they'll just keep talking at you at night until you'll go crazy. So you have to do it. And it was just incredible the way the truth of what happened to my family has, you know, slowly, you know, I've slowly gotten information. And it, of course, all came to a head there when I found my great-grandmother's scrapbook and pictures and some other things in the California Historical Society.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then it was, oh, wow. And of course, there it was. Rumors, all families have rumors, okay?
Right,
and
right.
Mine was no exception. And there was one aunt who wanted everyone to believe that the Spaniards we were descended from were all pure Castilian, and that there had been no, intermarriage ever, and that they were just as pure and white and never married indigenous or anything like that. And of course, you know that the Moors lived in Spain for hundreds of years, but oh no, that wasn't involved. And it was absolutely delightful when I could finally get my DNA tested and prove that aunt was wrong. So there, Aunt Virginia.
Wow. Well, you know, so when you're talking about learning your family history and California, let's take a side shoot. When I was reading the book and I kept hearing the bear flaggers, I'm like, who are the bear flaggers? And I went, and I looked it up, and I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, this is part of California I did not know about. So you want to touch on that, the bear flaggers. Where did you hear about it in your family history or in the history of the land?
Well, I'd heard about the bear flag. We all see California's, and I knew some things about that period that you couldn't help but stumble across in school, even if they didn't tell the real side of the story to the students. And I wanted to know more about it because I knew that the Mexicans that had been in California beforehand got a raw deal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the more I read, and by the way, Heyday Press in California has a wonderful collection of books that they put out about early California. And if you want to know more, that's a good place. Go and see if they're in the library if you don't want to purchase. And so I just started reading. I must have read 10 or 15 of their books, and then I picked up books from other areas and here and there. And wow, I was just so surprised to know everything that went on and the horrible things that went on. I mean, I'd known bad things that happened, obviously.
Right.
But I had never known they were that bad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
so,
that people that are presented to students in California, at least when I was in high school, which was a while back, and they were presented as heroes, were really not heroic at all. Some of them were pretty nasty.
Oh, right. You are so right about that. Because, when I was reading, I was like, oh, my goodness. Because, growing up, the history we hear, we hear about the gold rush and we hear about, Sutter's Mill and all that. But we really don't hear a lot about, it's never the mean stuff that these early people did in California, is never really mentioned. And then, so it's such an eye-opener.
Yeah, well, Sutter, of course, as I've read various accounts, and I have no reason to believe, coming from the sources that, the information came from, that it's not true or a good part of it, had been married, and I think it was in Switzerland, and he left his pockets couldn't hold money very well. And I think he spent a fair amount of his wife's fortune, then left his wife and children, hopped a boat to come over to the U.S., stopped in Hawaii, which, for a while in order to pick up some ladies to bring to California to keep him company. And then when he had Native Americans working for him that, like a number of other people did, where they were treated more like slaves than citizens. Even though Mexico had outlawed slavery far earlier than we did. I mean, the things that he did and a number of other people in California did was just really wretched.
Right. So how did you come up, though, with with your characters, especially Catalina. She seems to be like just a very brave person, full of courage. How did you come up with her character, or did you mimic her character after someone in your family history?
No, she invaded my head, and I just learned her character. I mean, yeah, when some people who write, a lot of people who write have that happen. You know, characters mm-hmm. come into their head, and they won't shut up until you write their story and they're telling you.
Right.
And it's all intertwined in your own thoughts. So you think you're thinking it up, but you're not really thinking it up. They're thinking it up.
Right.
And sometimes you have arguments with them. No, you can't do that.
That's very true. That's very true. And I do interview a lot of writers that say that they say, I have to argue sometime to make it go where I want it to go, you know, compared to, you know, your characters where they want it to go, you know, which is really interesting. But it's a common, you know, common factor with all writers. It really is. And this must be even more hilarious to the writers that use an outline to write their book.
I don't. I've learned better.
So you use a lot of you create characters that are very powerful. The women are powerful characters, and you know, in your writing, where does that come from?
Well, first of all, I have to have powerful characters because I give them things mm-hmm. to worry about and things they have to do. And, you know, you want to keep your reader interested. So mm-hmm. even though they're telling me this story, you know, I because it's also coming from me. We do it together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in
mm-hmm.
order to cope, they've got to start out with a fair measure of strength, or they're going to have to, you know, inner strength, or they're going to have to grow in that direction.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I, you know, I came from a poor family, 3 generations living in a 2-bedroom flat in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was a very strong woman. She had to leave school in the 8th grade. And or maybe it was just after the 8th grade had finished because her father passed away, leaving her mom a widow. And so the house was taken away from them, you know, the kids who were old enough, and she was old enough because she was 12, to go out to work full time.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went through a lot. And my maternal grandfather went through a lot. He had to go out as an apprentice machinist when he was 11 years old.
Wow.
So these were, you know, these were people of strong character. And
mm-hmm.
My maternal grandmother had a strong faith in God, and she raised me to do the to be the same. And
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
my mother was a powerful woman in her own right, even though she was weak in her marriage because my father beat her up all the time.
Mm.
So, and yet she would persevere. And my sister and I bonded quite early with both my mother, with our mother, and with our grandmother. And that
mm-hmm.
strength that we learned, we learned that a woman can be powerful, and it has nothing to do with money influence. It comes from inside of themselves and who they are and what they believe and what they think is right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I gave that gift of power to Catalina, who already told me she had it, you know. Just,
not in
so many words, but just the feeling that you have when you've got a character growing inside of you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's true. So tell me, what is the significance of the name of the book, Plague of Flies?
The Plague of Flies, where there are two perspectives here. Number one, the flies in the story start out as the reader perceives them and she perceives them as her enemies. These are horse flies. They're always bothering her. No one ever sees them but her. They never come by when anyone else is around. But when she's alone, they bug the heck out of her. They never bite her. As she says, they just threaten to bite me, showing them, you know, convincing me that they really could if they wanted. And that relationship changes in the story.
Okay.
As she grows, the relationship changes. And another thing that is very important is that she has been taught how to read by her grandfather. And this was a time that women were not automatically taught how to read. And some in California who wanted to, whose parents wanted them to read if they were girls. The guys could learn how, no problem, although the literacy rate in California, in Mexican California, was high overall. But some girls would not learn how to read because they did not want to damage their prospects of getting a good marriage.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that would give them more status with the guys if they couldn't read. Well, Catalina, being her own person and then getting encouragement at the same time, says she'll learn how to read. Now, books were extraordinarily expensive. And from her, you know, from her family, because they have a smaller rancho, they, you know, they have a hard time getting along. They, you know, they don't have a lot of extra money. And so pause for a minute. Where was the thought? Oh, I hate when this happens. So her father, her grandfather, has been given three books by a very famous man, Mariano Vallejo. He was a real person, and he has a huge rancho. He has lots of money. And one of them is a copy of Don Quixote by Cervantes. One is an unnamed thin book of poems in which there's a poem about the famous Spanish hero from medieval times, El Cid. And one is a book that her grandfather never lets her see. And one time she came in and she managed to look at something on the book that said, "Flies are born to be eaten by spiders." Now, those of us who read a lot will know that that came from Voltaire. And that Voltaire was a writer in the 18th century Enlightenment period. He was very critical of politics, and he was critical of religion. And so his books were banned by the Catholic Church. So Mariano Vallejo, there are rumors, and this is true, there are rumors that he went to Mexico, the regular, you know, main part of Mexico, and smuggled a copy of one of Voltaire's books into California, and as a result, he almost got excommunicated.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so in my story, Catalina's grandfather, her abuelito, ends up in, you know, in the possession of, because, you know, her grandfather has no influence, he is not rich, nobody knows what he's doing, so, I mean, it was very possible for that to have happened. Now, to really understand that, you need to go back and read actually what Voltaire wrote, when he did it when he was 80. "I have lived 80 years of life and know nothing for it but to be resigned and tell myself that flies are born to be eaten by spiders and man to be devoured by sorrow." So Catalina, and that's never, that whole thing never comes out in the book because she's never allowed to see it. But anybody
okay.
who wants to look it up, it's there. And Catalina must experience and overcome sorrow before she can become who she needs to be. And that's the significance,
okay.
the twofold significance of the title of the book.
Well,
which
you know
I never
what?
Explained.
I can tell that. Well, I can tell that this was an exciting venture for you to write this book because it's just, I can hear it in your voice. There's so much energy in your voice talking about this book. So what lessons do you want people to learn from this book here?
Well, essentially, I think of it as that family, duty, honor, and faith are important. And not all of us have a religious faith, but we have a faith in something that has value, something that's good. And to forge the key to true power, you've got to stoke that inner fire in yourself with unselfish love and the respect for all peoples, including yourself. And that's what I want people to come away with. Whether or not they do, that's, you know, up to them. But that's what I feel. That's what I felt when I wrote this book.
So why do you think it's important for teens and young adults to read nowadays? Because, you know, this your other book that you wrote and this one are both for young adults. Why do you think it's important for them to read?
Well, you know, we live in a world that often twists reality or just marginalizes it, reduces it to just a bunch of sensational sound bites or something. And the kids look at electronic devices where the visuals are fed to them, the words are fed to them, and they're not having to work the same way that you do when you read. You know,
that's true.
I think being able to take those words in through the eyes, process them as to what they mean, what the author meant them to mean, and then visualize it as you go along, and you're doing this really fast as you read. I think that helps young readers to deal with complex issues because only are they getting additional perspectives from reading books, and it doesn't matter if they're fiction or nonfiction. They're still getting different perspectives into life. But what they're also doing is they're learning to deal with complex issues that aren't just fed to them. They've got to think about it.
True.
They've got to turn the, what did they mean? What did the author really mean?
Right.
And I think
that's really why. Well, you know, you're right about that because I think that it's kind of interesting. I think that there's more of imagination, thoughts, and you know, and being able to see the other side of something in our older adults than it is in our younger. Our younger who are growing up on social media or, you know, and really not really understanding that some of these things are so close to real life, but they're not real life. But I think that we had an advantage growing up, you know, because we had to read. We read in my house. We read. And then, of course, it helps that your whole family are teachers. So there was never a thing of when you do your homework and you took it to someone to look it over. There was never a time that you were not going to hand in a one sheet of homework to the teacher. You know, somebody in the family is going to make you look up stuff and read. So, and we all pretty much have that. But I do have a concern when, with kids that don't pick up a book. I was really excited when my granddaughter, you know, just told me about the books that she likes. And she's a very avid reader. And so it's great, you know, it's great to know that between her and her sister, but I love to give them books also that, you know, somewhat like yours that has some fantasy in it and adventure. just a perspective outside the box. You know, I love to give them books like that, and I love to talk to them about it. So when my granddaughter came to visit, we went to the library, and I said, "So what kind of books do you like?" She says, "Grandma, I like mythology." I was like, "Oh my gosh!" I'm like, "Me too." So I think it is important for teens and young readers to read, and I'm glad to see that there's more and more books for young adults that are being introduced into the reading world. I know, especially for us, we've had quite a few writers who write young adults on our program, and it's just been amazing, the books.
Yeah, and if people are not that good of a reader, it's okay, because you make yourself learn how to read. And reading is practice for reading. I didn't learn how to read and interpret words. I was not ready to do that till I was in the second grade. Uh-huh. Nor was my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing fine now, thank you. Because once she learned how to read, there was no stopping her. She devoured books.
You know, I just think reading just opens up a whole new world for you. I just think it does. It really does. So tell me, was there any part in the book that you had a hard time writing or that you decided, I'm not going to put that in there right now, or I'm going to save it for another day? Was there any parts like that in the book?
Well, I know that were some that took – that drained me emotionally.
Okay.
There are certain parts that just drained me, and I had to put stuff down, come back to it, go have a glass of wine, doing something like that.
Yeah.
And
it
was because there are some emotional things that happen. There are some things in this book that I could not have written until I happened to lose someone that I loved very much.
Oh, okay.
And then I could write it. Then I could write it. Because then I went through and I experienced right then what the character was experiencing.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, there were parts that were harder to write than others, and there was other parts that were hard to write because I just didn't know anything about the history or very little about the history in order to put them in the book. You know, can I get away with this? Could I not get away with it? There was one circumstance where in telling of the story, you realize that Don Berryessa and his twin nephews were murdered by the Bear Flaggers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came ashore in a boat. And everywhere it was, they were the only three in the boat. And I wanted to put somebody else in that boat. But I said, couldn't do that because it wasn't historical. This is historical fantasy. But it is historical.
Right.
So I just thought, well, really, was there three people or four people in the boat? And I found one reference in a library in Ventura, California, that there might have been a fourth person in the boat.
Wow.
It was a nonfiction reference. And I said, that's it. I've got it. It's legal.
Very good. Very good. So... what is your next project, Laurel?
I'm going to actually use the idea of the fact that my great-great-grandmother came to California with her two daughters as a widow. Now, the real reason she came to California, I don't know. She didn't go back to Spain for whatever reason. She didn't stay where she was in Mexico, where she was well off. For whatever reason, she came to California. Mm-hmm. And so I have made up a reason why the character, the woman in my story, and her two young daughters come to California, and that is that their lives are in danger. Somebody's trying to the father was murdered, and they want to get the whole family.
Wow, okay.
So that is, okay. You know, that sets it up. And so I've got this woman and her, she's got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old daughter.
Okay. Wow, that's going to be interesting to hear that one, to see that book, for sure.
Yeah, it will be, it'll have plenty of adventure, you know. It's going to be, I'm going to steampunk it.
Okay.
Like I did the Engine Woman's Light.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And go back and try that.
Okay, that's going to be interesting. All right.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I like to ask all the authors some kind of a tip to give to authors coming up. So I'm going to ask you one that has to do with young writers. What kind of advice would you give to young writers starting out writing their own books?
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just start writing. Put down the iPhone.
Right.
Put down the this. Put down the that. Get out. I mean, you can write on a computer. You can dictate into your – well, you can dictate into your phone. You can use it for that and then put it in the computer later. But write it. You might even try for a girl, if she's got a handbag, throw in a pencil or pen and a small notebook. And when she's by herself, write down her thoughts. Write down what something looks like or smells like or feels like or how she feels.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's how you start learning how to do it. I started writing before I could read. I would tell stories to my older sister. She'd write them down. I would cut pictures out of magazines, and I would decorate the words. She always left me plenty of room on the paper to decorate.
Okay.
And so that's how I started writing. I had my first story, as wretched as it was, published when I was 11.
Okay. Why did you say wretched as it was?
Well, it was. It was horrid. It must have been. It was published in the San Francisco News, which at the time was one of the big newspapers in San Francisco. And they had a weekly children's section, children's column. And it was published there. And I think that week I must have been the only person who submitted something.
Oh, okay.
It was that bad. But I was so proud of it.
Oh, gosh, I know. That is too much. That's too much. That's great. That's great. I when I first wrote my first novel, it was hilarious because, you know, I felt so accomplished because I wrote a whole book. But then my teacher was saying to me, he's like, oh, it's a great story. He says, but your grammar is awful. And I'm like, okay. You know, I was like, okay, I could work on that. So I kind of put the book away for a while, and then I took it out, and I was reading it, and I'm like, oh, my God, your grammar was awful. I know what you mean about that. So I wanted to ask you, though, who did the cover for your book? Because the cover is fantastic.
Julie Dillon, who she is internationally known and an award-winning artist in the realms of science fiction and fantasy. And she did the cover for The Engine Woman's Light as well.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. It's a great cover. And I just want to tell our listening audience that you can go to Laurel's website, which is laurelannhill.com, and we'll be adding that to our interview as well. She has a great website, and I see here you have Laurel and Hildago. You want to tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, I just, knowing that I knew very little about early California, I wrote five blog pieces, and I have several more I have to write. I haven't worked on that since 2020. Because I've had with my novel coming out, and then also I was editing an anthology of poems and stories for the California Writers Club, San Francisco Peninsula branch, and so that took me a long time, just hundreds of hours to do that. And
right,
so
I've
been pretty busy this past year between that and then some issues in my family where they've needed my assistance.
Yeah.
And so I just got the 5 episodes done. But if you want to know more about early California, you can go and read Laurel and Hidalgo. And it's no L in Hidalgo, it's Hidalgo.
Hidalgo.
But it comes across as Laurel and Hill, Laurel and Hidalgo.
Okay.
And so I thought that would be fun, and I've made it a fun thing to read.
Okay. So everyone, we will be adding that information to our interview with Laurel on the magazine, and you'll be able to go and look at her website. It's a great website, a lot to read on there. So just make sure you go. We'll be putting that on there. And Laurel, it's been great to talk to you again. I'm looking forward to having my granddaughter read this book.
Oh, good.
Because I'm going to tell you, books are great. Books are really inspiring. And I haven't told her yet, but I want to tell her, I want her to read some of these adventurous books because I named her mom after an adventurous book I read with a female hero. And it was the first book I read. And I was so excited about this woman being such a hero that's who I named my youngest daughter after.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, because I wanted her to be strong and, I wanted her to be that hero. And she really is a hero. She's really a hero to us and our family. But I get to tell, my granddaughter these stories and give her books to read, and we just have great conversations. So this will be one that I'll give her to read. And thank you again for being on our program. Do you have anything you want to tell our audiences before we leave?
Just thank you for listening. Really, thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Laurel,
and
thank you for your
reading.
We will keep reading. And everyone, this has been Celeste Duckworth, and our guest has been Laurel Ann Hill, who's written another book, Plague of Flies, Revolt of the Spirits, 1846. And I hope that you will, share this program and share Laurel's book and, get a copy for your young adult. And thank you for being such a great part of our show, Laurel. Have a great evening.
You as well, Celeste.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.